Hello and welcome to another episode of Irreverent Testimony. Today is Monday, January 18th, 2016. Last night we watched the Democratic presidential debate, which was the fourth? Was it the fourth? Something like that.
Yeah.
We're losing track. We're getting sick of watching these, to be frankly honest. But obviously the Democratic ones are easier to get through than the Republican ones. We are decided to take sort of a different approach to this one. We're going to go ahead and fact check the some of the Democratic talking points from the debate. First of all, we'll introduce everybody. As usual, I'm Travis.
I'm Rachel.
And I'm Dana.
And yeah, we're here to discuss some of these finer points. You might be asking yourself, hey, you guys didn't do like a full-on fact check of the Republican debate, but that is sort of redundant, as it's, you know, that would take all night.
Everything they say is basically bullshit.
Right, right. Maybe for the Republican, we'll do like a actual fact was truth.
Yeah, that'd be
easier. That'll be a lot quicker.
Yeah, yeah.
But we're going to go ahead and fact check the Democrats. So I'm going to turn this mostly over to Rachel, who did sort of the heavy digging and lifting and research into this today. And yeah, let's take it away, Rach.
All right. So this debate was held the day before Martin Luther King Jr. Day, his birthday, which is a nationally held holiday. It was hosted by the Congressional Black Caucus in South Carolina, which was really interesting. I think we'll touch on some of these points about how candidates answered, I think, a little bit differently given their crowd and given the tenor of the day.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a lively debate. It's the last one before the Iowa caucus and New Hampshire primary.
Right.
So there won't be another one, which is
not for the Democrats.
Thanks, Debbie. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, by the way, DNC chairperson.
Yeah, there's been a lot of chatter about her hiding these debates or not scheduling enough of them.
Yeah, well, I don't know, though. I'm starting to have mixed feelings about that. Like, it was a good, spirited debate, but I don't know if anything, you know, shockingly new came up with the candidates' positions or their styles or anything, but we're going to get into all that.
Yeah. So they started with openings. So this debate was against Hillary Clinton v. Bernie Sanders, and then minorly with Martin O'Malley.
He's still
he
around.
Had a very minor role.
A cameo.
Yeah, a cameo. Dana, what were you calling him?
I was calling him Martin O'Buzzwords because he only got to talk like three different times.
So he had to cram in all his,
every single thought that he could possibly
all
try to get
across. All his pre-prepared points he had.
Yeah, so to open it up, Hillary was talking about Martin Luther King Jr., on how she first watched some of his speeches and rallies with her dad,
mm-hmm.
Which I thought was interesting because Bernie has such a legacy with Martin Luther King Jr. But then, of course, he brought it up in his opening, and he didn't talk about that legacy, which I thought was kind of great. He just said that he wanted to continue what Martin Luther King Jr. was trying to do. And then he talked about the thing that most people don't remember. Everyone sort of remembers Martin Luther King Jr. for being a man who talked about racial politics,
mm-hmm.
and racial equality. But in his last days and last months, he really focused on economic equality and economic inequality and
sure.
unions and workers' rights and that kind of stuff. And Bernie has obviously taken that as his mantle. And so he talked a lot about like continuing that legacy of MLK Jr.
Yeah, and it was a lot of that got him in hot water with J. Edgar Hoover and some of the more establishment, donor class, which still exists today, and people called him a communist and all these other things.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I actually thought it was really interesting that Hillary Clinton invoked personal memories of Martin Luther King.
Yeah.
And Bernie Sanders didn't.
Did not, even though he marched with the man, from my knowledge. So O'Malley took a different route, which I actually appreciated. He talked about how South Carolina took down the Confederate flag last year,
mm-hmm.
And thanks for that. And then basically he said, we need new leadership, and then we need to continue Obama's work. Obama was a main theme of the night, and I think in a way that was more pronounced than any other debate, because it was Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday and because it was in front of the Congressional Black Caucus, they were much more hesitant to criticize him and much more apt to come to his defense and be defensive about their own record with Obama.
Yeah, there's some good practical reasons for that, too. He just came off what was overwhelmingly considered a very successful final State of the Union address. He's just had some major accomplishments here with the Iran deal going forward. So it's a good time to sort of have Obama's back and say, you know, I really support him. Of course, the dead opposite of what we see on the other side. But Yeah, so moving on. What else we got, guys?
So the first question they asked was, in your first 100 days, what would be your first three priorities? And no one gave three. Everyone gave like 10. But sure. Bernie talked about universal health care. The big three was universal health care, minimum wage of $15 an hour, and rebuilding infrastructure, which for him would then create a bunch of other things like jobs and economic security and a bunch of other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Clinton talked about, she named like seven things in her first point. She said her first priority would be presenting Congress with a bill that would, and then listed like 12 things, creating jobs and all the things.
Right.
She talked about building on the Affordable Care Act. And yeah, I mean, she had like 20 things in there.
Yeah, we're going to get pretty heavily into that. That was sort of the most contentious debating points in the night was Billary's, Billary. Yeah, that's an old term from the 90s.
Billary.
Well, I was thinking Bernie, mixing Bernie with Hillary.
Yeah.
So Hillary's healthcare plan going forward and Bernie's healthcare plan going forward, which is a little bit radical. And, you know, I'll give my two cents on it, but we're going to sort of delve into that next.
We may all disagree on this. I think all three of us might have different opinions, but, O'Malley talked about rebuilding cities, you know, having been the mayor of Baltimore, which he would like to remind everyone that's who he is, that he wants to rebuild cities and that we sort of have been neglecting them and that, you know, when we talk about infrastructure, that's the place where, like, most people live. So we should maybe be focusing most of our resources on those, raising the minimum wage, and then did a kind of a Hillary thing and went like, and seven other things. But those are the two things he focused on the most.
Right.
So pretty standard. I mean, there's not a lot of daylight between the three of them on those other than the differences in what they want to do to healthcare.
There was the guns too. I don't know if we're, you know, that's next on the list.
Yeah, they didn't bring that up in the top 100, like 100 days, three priorities, any of them.
Yeah.
But it definitely was another point of contention that we'll talk about and fact check. So the first question after that was directed at Bernie, and they said basically, you know, Hillary has come out and attacked you and said that you're a consistent vote for the NRA, which is true. She did say that because he was a senator of Vermont, and he definitely had some votes that are not consistent with super progressive politics in terms of gun politics. And he came back and said basically that's bullshit. I have a D minus rating with the NRA. And then he talked about the South Carolina black church shootings and just sort of went into, all of that. And then went to talk about, that was basically his answer. It was like, no, you're not being accurate and I don't support guns. And so
he also had to do a bit of a mea culpa and turn around and say he's reconsidering his position on the bill he supported that shields, gun manufacturers.
Yeah. Correct. He didn't do that till later, but yes, he did talk about that. What were you going to say, Dana?
I just said correct.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. So they had a question from a YouTube viewer, because this was one of those debates where they ask people to write in. And they only used people, which I thought was really smart of them, that had a bunch of followers on YouTube. So it was sort of like, I don't know if you want to call them reputable YouTube people. But, you know, this girl had like 350,000
Well, it's a good
YouTube
way to
followers.
Engage that person and all their followers.
Right. And it's not some sort of crackpot weirdo that's putting, like, you know,
it wasn't PewDiePie
kicking the balls videos or, you know,
really?
My cat ate a squirrel or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, she's a legitimate person on YouTube. And she had a really, really good question. She asked, she feels that there's a conflict of interest when there's a police shooting and local prosecutors are the people who investigate that shooting, and what we should do to make sure that that is not a conflict of interest, or how to address that. And mm-hmm. I loved that question so much because it's absolutely accurate. It's absolutely... Yeah.
Best question of the night.
Yeah, definitely. 100%. Yeah. And I loved his answer. He said it should... any police shooting resulting in death should auto-trigger a U.S. AG investigation, mm-hmm. Attorney General, which would mean the Department of Justice is investigating the shooting rather than the local prosecuting attorney's office or the local sheriff or some other local law enforcement office, that the Attorney General should immediately be brought in. And then he said that the other two priorities to really help with the police problem in this country is to demilitarize the police and to promote diversity in that the police force should look like the people that they are policing.
Yeah.
So, Dana, I know you have opinions about this, particularly demilitarization.
I was actually really glad that that got brought up. I think it's crucial that the police departments be demilitarized. I think that they're, you know, particularly when a lot of the Black Lives Matter movements were having a lot of the protests throughout last year.
And still are.
Yeah, I mean, we don't see SWAT vehicles and tanks rolling down the street right now, but look at Ferguson and, I mean, that was insane.
They look more like an occupying force than a protect and serve.
And I mean, essentially they are. I mean, that goes to the point of look like, you know, we want the makeup of the community and the makeup of the police force to look the same. Because otherwise you are just an occupying force.
Yes.
And it's an amazing contrast with the tone deaf response on the other side, which doesn't want to acknowledge that there have been unarmed, innocent people being shot by police. And that people at the very least are angry, and it's all just, you know, how dare you question the police, and why does the president hate the cops?
Well, and police are the most maligned people in this society.
Right,
it's just
right.
Like,
Blue
what
lives
kind
matter.
Of, yeah, kind of nonsense thing is that to say? So I really loved his answer on that. I love the man. It was beautiful.
And as far as I can recall, and you probably have the notes on this, Hillary's answer was okay, but it was a little more vague.
They actually asked her, they didn't let her answer that question.
Oh, right,
they talked to her about heroin. But she did talk about... She pivoted back to that question.
Yeah.
And yeah, hers was a little bit more, less directed. She said policing has to change because the specific question was about like heroin's become such an epidemic and the war on drugs doesn't work and what are you going to do?
The heroin thing is interesting. You know, I used to work in addiction research and this was in the late 2000s. And at least in South Florida, I had a pretty good handle on what, you know, what the major problems were. And it was a lot of like prescription painkillers and things like that. And cocaine was still really big. Heroin was not as big a scourge, at least down there in the mid to late 2000s.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have actually really known as much if not for both the Republican and the Democratic debates that this is coming up everywhere, interestingly. But it just kind of goes in cycles like that. But that's just sort of an aside.
I actually think it's not.
So, yeah, I working in the medical field, I can tell you that the rise of this is coming from doctors being told specifically that they're not supposed to be giving these pain medicines that were such a big problem in the late 2000s.
So they're turning to heroin?
And so they are,
interesting.
They are turning to heroin to treat their own chronic pain.
And to treat their own addiction to opioids. So they can't treat their chronic pain or they can't afford their pain medication and heroin's really cheap.
Yeah,
so they go to the streets, they
cheap.
Buy heroin, or they've become addicted and their doctors aren't really able to help them with that addiction other than to turn them to law enforcement. And so they go to the streets and they buy heroin and become addicted. And so she addressed that. She talked about Narcan, which is a drug that is used in some communities by law enforcement. It's like a kind of antidote essentially to heroin and opioid overdoses. It's kind of controversial because I don't understand why exactly. We should not save people who are dying from heroin addiction.
That's the thing.
I don't know.
Aside from maybe Kasich, nobody on the other side, and this is true of local Republicans and Republican governors, is, you know, they want to bluster and they don't want to fund these kinds of drug rehab programs or drugs or things like that. So they just kind of blind themselves to the problem until there's a huge epidemic or there's a big HIV outbreak because of sharing needles or things, you know, things like this.
But even then, it's blaming the victim. It's like, well, I'm not going to give them needles. They'll do more heroin. That's like, I'm not going to give kids condoms because then they'll have sex. It's nonsense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in this particular instance, I do believe it is still kind of the funding or looking soft on drugs.
Yes.
Kind of thing. But this isn't about treatment. This is about when somebody's in the middle of an overdose, being able to stop that overdose from progressing.
Right. But it's all kind of in the same ballpark of legislation that a lot of Republican state houses just want to shoot down and say, you know, no, we're not investing in that.
Right. We want to be punitive. We want you to die if you do heroin because you're a drug user
fault.
And you're a criminal and you're bad. Same way as like, we want you to get pregnant and get AIDS because you had sex. It's, you know, it's the moralistic sort of version of law enforcement or legislation, I should say. So she advocated that every police department in the country be educated in the use of Narcan and required not just police, but also firefighters and paramedics. And mm-hmm. I completely 100% advocate for that. I think that's a great idea. She also talked about moving away from drugs as a crime and more to a public health crisis,
yes,
which is really about decriminalizing drugs, which I think, God, we should talk about that more in our party, in every party in the country. It's vital, and it's not popular. It's one of those things, just like the Narcan, that, you know, you look soft on drugs and soft on crime. And what about those? What was it that guy said, that the black people come into our community with crack and impregnate our white girls? Like, that's still the mentality for a lot
Paul
of people.
Paul LePage in Maine.
Yeah.
His days are numbered, but...
Yeah.
And nobody on the other side is talking. I mean, Kasich a little bit, but he's pulling at 2%. And I think maybe Rand Paul said something about it.
Well, Rand Paul's pro decriminalization.
Yeah.
He is. Yeah. He's the only one that is, by the way. Everyone else is sort of pro, like... We're not going to say decriminalization. We're going to say, like, we should talk about it as a public health crisis rather than blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I mean, Hillary was the one that, she's the only one that really addressed this question. Bernie was given a follow-up. Bernie was the only one that was given a follow-up on this question. And he said, I didn't love, to be honest, his answer on this. He said that the biggest problem is that we need to hold pharmaceutical companies accountable when people misuse their drugs, which for me, as a person who has had chronic pain, is not the problem.
this will probably come up in the fact checking later.
It doesn't actually, so go ahead.
Oh, well, one of the fact checking things was Hillary was trying to attack Bernie about guns, and we'll get to that later. But she had talked about his support of a bill that kept gun manufacturers from being held liable for anything that happens with those firearms.
No, that does come up, yeah. But how that relates to pharmaceuticals? So
that relates specifically to, this is the same legislation. So it prevents criminal liability for a whole host of people, automobile manufacturers, gun manufacturers, drug manufacturers, from being held liable for what happens with their product if it's misused outside, you know, when it gets out in the real world.
And I can understand that. I just think his answer was a little tone deaf in terms of the problem with heroin is not that pharmaceutical companies are producing a product that people get addicted to. That's not the problem.
Yeah, it's
you know,
just sort of generally in line with this whole, you know, hold corporations accountable theme.
Sure. But I'm just saying from my perspective, which is a different perspective than probably most people have, is that opioid pain medications are really effective and they have fewer side effects than, say, something that's legal like most NSAIDs, right? So NSAIDs are...
acetaminophen.
Right. But what does it stand for?
Non-steroidal anti-inflammatories?
Yes.
Not acetaminophen. It would be...
Yeah, acetaminophen, naproxen, ibuprofen.
Naproxen sodium, ibuprofen.
All of those.
Acetaminophen is something else.
It's also an NSAID, though.
Is it?
Yeah. And they're also really... They're all bad for one organ or another, however it processes,
usually
either through your liver or your kidneys.
Mm-hmm.
They're terrible for your stomach lining. They have a lot of really negative effects with alcohol, with all kinds of other things. And they're not very effective. And I can take them over the counter in as high a dose as I feel like.
But they're not addictive.
Right.
Right.
But I can take one Vicodin and my pain's gone and I have none of those side effects. And my liver has minorly affected because it's basically like... one acetaminophen,
mm-hmm.
whereas I'd have to take 8 to 10 to have the same sort of
chronic pain
effect.
Is
so,
an area of research that really needs more.
Right.
More
and it's an area of research that's too heavily regulated because people are so worried about this heroin epidemic. So it's a complicated problem.
It is. Yeah.
But I didn't, I just personally, Bernie's answer was like, well, okay.
Well, the funny thing is you can't even get pure hydrocodone or anything, that would be Vicodin.
Yeah.
Those don't even really exist.
No, it's cut with
because
with
they cut it all with APAP. Yeah,
exactly. All right, so that was the first, I thought, interesting set of questions that were not something I expected them to ask about, and then they got right into the meat of everything we expected them to ask about. So this first topic we're going to talk about, we're going to talk about what they said, and then we're going to talk about what the facts are. So this is about healthcare. So... basically, the overall theme is that Clinton has been attacking Bernie Sanders because she believes that his healthcare plan, which is Medicare for All, which is basically universal healthcare, will dismantle the Affordable Care Act, which is Obamacare, in a way that undermines the system that they worked so hard, as everyone remembers back in 2008, 9, 10, that we had such epic battles about. That starting over would not be effective. And that even when we tried to get these policies enacted, when we had both the Senate and the House of Representatives as Democrats, and we had a filibuster-proof majority, essentially, and Obama, we still couldn't even get agreement on whether or not universal health care should be passed.
No, we just barely got the ACA passed.
Exactly. And the ACA is, like, not...
It's a Republican
it's
bill.
Better, but, like, not... Yeah, it's a Republican bill. And so Clinton was attacking Sanders on whether or not his plan is effective, reasonable, possible, and also will it dismantle the Affordable Care Act?
I have a lot of opinions on this, but
I think we all do. Yeah. So
go
ahead.
Where do you want to start?
So let's start with Clinton said, I don't want to start over. I would like to defend what we already have, and I'd like to build on it because it's already a system in place.
Mm-hmm.
And Bernie said he doesn't want to dismantle it. He wrote it. He worked on it. He voted for it. But then, to her point, she's like, yeah, but what you're doing completely dismantles it. So that's the basic argument. Let's just go in a round circle and start with Trav. What do you think about that argument? What do you think about both of their sides? How do you feel?
Okay. In principle, I love Bernie Sanders' idea. Yeah. I love single payer. It's originally what Obama wanted.
Yes.
It's certainly what Hillary Clinton wanted when she started working on this in 1993. The reality was that it wasn't going to happen. They were never going to get the votes in Congress to do it. And the only way to do this was to partner with the private health insurance market so that they would get a piece of it. And that's basically how we came up with the Affordable Care Act. It's done a lot of good. I mean, full disclosure, I am on an ACA plan right now.
Yeah.
That, you know, I can afford, and it's pretty solid and pretty good, and I'm happy with it. As are a lot of other people I know. Otherwise, I would basically not have insurance, and I would just be hoping not to get really sick.
Right.
But it has left certain people out. There's people that don't quite qualify for Medicaid because they make a little too much, and then the private insurance market, and then, you know, there's still some things. There's a lot of great stuff in ACA, and we've talked about it ad nauseum. Here's my problem with Bernie's plan and why Hillary makes a lot of sense on this. He's never going to get that through Congress.
Yep.
Right.
Not even the Congress that Obama had in 2008 would they have been able to get this through. Now, that's a cynical approach, and it's defeatist. It's also reality.
Yep.
And I think it almost goes hand in hand with the way Republicans have gotten themselves into trouble over the last two election cycles when they said, we're going to repeal Obamacare, and we're going to, you know, we're going to repeal Planned Parenthood, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do that, and we're going to do all these things that will never, ever get through Congress and would be vetoed by the president anyway. I think Bernie is just – I love the idea of single payer, but I don't know how he would possibly do it.
I don't either. So I'm going to go next. I totally agree with you. I do. Of course I wanted single payer. I wanted it in 2008. Shit, I wanted it in 93 when I was like 10 years old. I was like, that makes a lot of sense to me. I agree with her basic argument that, look, we fought so fucking hard to get Obamacare, to get the ACA. It was tooth and nail. They're still trying to repeal it. At least there's a system in place that has basic protections for people.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't do everything. It's not perfect. What we can do is build on that. And what I was making the analogy before about was gay marriage. So people who wanted gay marriage were incensed at the idea that we would support civil unions.
Right.
No, it's not far enough. It's bullshit. We want full equal rights.
And
people in the middle.
I
was one of those people.
Sure.
I was like, fuck you. I don't want to sit in the middle of the bus. I want to sit wherever I want on the bus, right? Okay. But civil unions allowed a slow progression. People saw, okay, the world didn't end when gay people had rights.
Right.
We give them a little more rights. And like less than 5 years later, gay marriage is legal everywhere. I
mm-hmm.
feel that the ACA for me, this is just my opinion, is that we have at least a framework with which to work upon.
Yes.
And if we can just build on that and build on it and build on it, we can eventually get to a place where we can start dismantling private insurance and adding more people to Medicare.
And
just saying, fuck the ACA, let's have a vote, let's do this. It's not going to work. It's never going to happen. And I think it's a false promise from Bernie. Not that I don't think he believes it. I just don't see that it's realistic that it will happen.
Well, I think his hope is that all the synergy would take place and hopefully there's
going
to be
this big
wave election.
But that happened with Obama and did not occur. And we had all the blue.
Yeah. And I think it's important to point out the pragmatism of incremental change.
Yes.
Right? And look, as we've gone on here.
Dana's point first.
No, go ahead.
Yeah. No, as we've gone on here and people realize, okay, there are no death panels. No, the premiums didn't actually skyrocket. you know, no, you know, they didn't pull the plug on grandma, you know, no, I can still get my medications. Actually, this isn't so bad. And, you know,
oh, hey, my kid has insurance. And yeah, oh, they, yeah. You know, like my older brother's girlfriend got pregnant and they weren't, she wasn't on his insurance at the time. So he tried to add her to his insurance. Mm-hmm. And they said pregnancy is a pre-existing condition.
Which is insane.
Which is nuts. Okay. So if it had been a year and a half later, she would have been fully covered. Instead, she was on Medicaid and got really shitty care and really owes a lot of money that she won't pay. And we paid for all of it. And if he had just been able to add her as the father of her child, his company would have paid for it now. It's absurd. But I want to hear, Dana, what you think about the argument.
Oh, I agree with both of you, and I agree with both of them, actually. I think they both have perfectly reasonable points. I just, I see Bernie's proposition as a little bit more of like, I think he sees it as the next generation and as the incremental change. Like, do we have to take the smallest of baby steps all the time, or can we take, you know, a relatively moderate step to what it was that we obviously all wanted in the first place?
Yeah.
Especially him as, you know, one of the co-authors of the bill and having to make so many concessions, you know, to ask him point blank, what would your healthcare plan be? Of course that's going to be his answer, because that's what he would want it to be. I don't think that necessarily points to him being non-pragmatic. If we're going to say, like, let's take steps, like the Affordable Care Act is the step. How many steps do there have to be before we get to the end?
Quite a few more.
You think so?
Yeah.
Well, it's the complete dismantling of private health insurance. There would be no more health insurance.
And that's a huge industry. And they have a huge lobby.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is not going to happen in one election cycle, no matter how bad you want it, no matter how bad the voters want it.
Probably not even in two terms.
At least.
Realistically. I mean, even if he served two terms, I don't think he could get from Obamacare to universal Medicaid or Medicare for all.
But it wouldn't be disingenuous for him to say that this is the end goal. This is where we're going. This is what I'd like to see.
But that's not what he's saying.
That's what Obama said, too.
That's saying he elect me and that's going to happen.
Right.
And I just don't see how that's possible.
I
would love for it to be possible. I fully support. Understand this. I want single-payer health care.
Yeah.
Badly.
We all do. Yeah.
But if Bernie gets elected president on that promise, I don't see how he can fulfill it. I just don't.
No.
I agree.
And I
guess my only point is just I don't think that it's necessarily a lie on the stump to say that this is what I'd like to get, even if you know that it would be
a long slog. Oh, no, I don't think it's a lie. But are there any other opinions, or should we get to the fact-checking part of it?
So just the other two things. That one thing, Bernie said, which I thought was really smart. He said, you know, yeah, the ACA is great. It's great and wonderful. What about the 29 million people who still are not covered? And she had no answer for that, nor does anyone else, because that's the truth of the matter is right now the Affordable Care Act does not cover 29 million Americans.
But part of that problem is you have Republicans in red states who refuse to expand Medicaid.
Correct.
Right. I mean, that's
but that's not included in the ACA, clearly, because they don't have to do it.
No, well, they want a Supreme Court case that allows them to not do it, and that goes to winning races down ballot and getting back control of state houses and getting people who really would like that insurance to actually show up and vote, and then we would win these governorships back.
Right.
Yes.
But that's a whole other story.
Okay, so to fact check, here's what we learned. So Bernie says he's not going to tear up the Affordable Care Act. Hillary says he will. Have to start over, blah, blah, blah. So according to all the things I read today, it's true, and we all know this, right? It would absolutely, the ACA would no longer exist, not because he would tear it up to start over, but because he would be removing private insurance. There would be no more Medicare. There would be no more Medicaid. There would be no more tax credits, no more deductibles, no more private insurance. So yeah, it would dismantle the ACA in the way that it would no longer need to exist. Absolutely.
Right.
But her claim that he would dismantle it and then try to do something else is an unlikely strategy.
No, yeah.
No,
right.
That's never
so that was sort of disingenuous on her part.
That was like sort of a theoretical idea.
Right. So at one point he claimed that under his plan, he would save the average family $5,000. That's legit. His average family is a 4-person family. So 2 parents, 2 children with an employer who provides insurance with an average deductible, right? So without having paid any of the deductible, they pay about $4,955 a year if they make $50,000 a year. If they have the deductible that's average, and he didn't say every family, he said average family, which that was accurate. They'd have a $1,318 deductible.
For
bringing
four.
It up. Yeah, for family of four, making $50,000 yeah. with one person having insurance.
Mine was double that for a family of one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So they'd actually be paying about $6,300. And so when they hit him on the idea that, yeah, but you're going to raise their taxes, if you go back and look at the numbers on that, he'd raise their taxes about 2.2%, which would equal about $466.
Yeah, as an aside.
So hold on.
Yeah.
Instead of paying $6,300 a year for health insurance, they'd have their taxes raised $466, saving them about $5,000, which is exactly what he said. A little over. Some people are going to pay more. Some people are going to save less. Some people are going to, you know, but average, he's not wrong.
Well, this is what pisses me off about the, quote, mainstream liberal media so much, is that they can't wait to jump on this idea that, oh, well, you're going to raise taxes. You're going to raise taxes. You're going to raise taxes. It's like, yeah, but we're saving people $5,000 and, you know, keeping people out of bankruptcy and catastrophic medical bills they can't pay.
Yeah.
But the mainstream media, well, it's going to be hard and it's going to be difficult and people's taxes might go up a little. So this is just a crazy idea.
I mean, if you
idea.
Think of, if interestingly for me, so the Supreme Court, when they said Obamacare was legal, defined that, John Roberts, the Supreme Court, Chief Supreme Court, said it's because it's a tax. It's legal because it's a tax.
Right.
So if you think of healthcare as a tax, the tax right now on American families is about $5,000 a year.
Right.
Bernie's going to lower it to $466 for the average family. So he's going to lower your taxes by about $4,500 to $5,000 a year.
Which I think he could have explained maybe a little better.
Maybe I should just give him that soundbite.
You totally should. Bernie, let us help you with
your debate.
Hey,
Bernie, I can help you on this.
Bernie, I think, sometimes does fall down a little bit on the tax issue because I think he... When he stumps, he's around a lot of people that are with him, and it's a foregone conclusion that, you know, even at something like a marginal 60% tax rate,
mm-hmm.
the country does better, and we all know that, and we agree with it, and we know the history of it. And he gets up and gets on the debate stage and says things that are like, yeah, of course we'll raise taxes.
The media just runs with
and
Bernie wants to raise your taxes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I think he legit doesn't care. He wants to raise our tax. He wants to raise taxes. And I kind of respect him for that because yeah. I think they should be fucking raised.
The problem is your average American is not going to be able to parse out that my taxes might go up $400, but I'll save $6,000 in medical costs.
Or when I say I'm going to raise taxes, I don't mean you.
All they
Do you make $250,000 a year?
Right.
No? Then don't worry about it.
All they hear is my taxes are going to go up. That's all they hear, and that's all they can wrap their head around.
Yeah.
You know,
agreed.
This is why Walter Mondale got killed, one of the reasons, in 1984 in the election versus Reagan. And, you know, he admitted he was going to raise taxes. Reagan did as well. But, you know, he had the audacity to tell the truth.
Well, I think one Absolutely. Of the things that people need to understand about taxes in general better is, you know, the way that the actual tax structure works is that you don't, if you let's say you crack 250 and that puts you in a different tax bracket, you don't pay a new tax bracket on everything that you make. You just pay it on what you make over the 250. And people don't
right.
seem to understand that
oh,
at
people
all.
Don't understand, period. I mean the majority of Americans don't even look at their tax returns because they still think their taxes went up under Obama when the average, for the most part, they actually went down for most people
right.
under Obama. It's like, all perception. Perception right. over the reality of the numbers because they don't look at it.
Well, and Obama kept most of the Bush tax cuts for
yes.
middle – so, yeah.
Which I kind of consider a broken promise. But, I mean, when I was in
I'm
school –
I'm not going to complain.
There were a bunch of people who I went to school with that were all hoping that they'd, you know, be getting out of engineering school and making a pretty good salary. And I think I heard out of most of them – trying to sit down and figure out what is that sweet spot where if you don't cross the line, where you don't end up losing money, because if you all of a sudden make like 110, then all of a sudden you lose 30, so it's like you made 80. I had to explain to them all, like,
that's not how it works.
It's
you
not
only pay
tiered so
a
dramatically.
Tire, yeah. So if you make, if the tax break is like 100,000 and you make 101,000, you only pay the higher rate on that 1,000.
Well, on that 1,000.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is,
you don't get thrown into this massively higher bracket.
No, you don't pay that on the whole
but
amount.
But you're right. Most people don't.
They don't understand that.
They don't understand.
And that. They're so afraid if they get thrown in that higher tax bracket that they're going to be poor all of a sudden, or, you know, suddenly 30% of their money is going to be gone and they may as well have not gotten that promotion or worked less or all the things.
Yeah.
Okay. So we talked about the healthcare fight. What the next question essentially was how to bring the country together. They talked about Obama's State of the Union address and the last part that we talked about in our State of the Union podcast about why we're so divided and all of that stuff. Hillary talked about specifically, I will go anywhere to meet anyone at any time to see if I can find common ground. Mm-hmm. She talked about her resume. She talked about, you know, going across the aisle when she was a senator. She talked about when she was the first lady working on healthcare. She talked about as a secretary of state. Obviously, she had to do a lot of that kind of stuff. And I thought that was a good answer. I thought it was a very Hillary answer. I mean, what else is she going to say?
She's, well, it's certainly in step with popular sentiment.
Yeah. I mean, and with her image, sort of.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I think that was a fair characterization of her past as well.
It is. Yeah. I mean, she was Bill Clinton's wife, but like one of the more active first ladies in the history of our country, maybe next to Eleanor Roosevelt. And then she went on to hold public office herself, and then she went on to hold executive office. So I think, you know, she's pretty great in terms of like being able to, you know, work across the aisle, particularly later she talks about like her relationship with Putin and other people. Bernie talked about veterans' healthcare reform, something that he worked across the aisle on, something that he worked really closely on. And then he pivoted. He didn't really... He's really, I think, being coached on this pivoting thing because he always goes back to, well, I worked on veterans' healthcare across the aisle, but the real issue is that Congress is owned by big money and they refuse to do the will of the people, and that's what the problem is, and it's not about working across the aisle. It's fighting corporate money and it's fighting big money, and I understand what he's saying and I absolutely agree with him, but it becomes a little bit tiresome for me when the question is, our country is divided, and you say that's because of big money. And I'm like, okay, what are you going to do about that?
It's partially true, right?
I mean, it is true in some way, but like everybody's owned by corporate money. So everybody's not going to be Bernie Sanders. Yeah, are you going to do about the divisiveness?
And being president isn't going to fix that. He did start to hint at, well, you know, I have all this energy behind me and I can bring all these new voters and we can win all these down ballot races and get a lot of other people like me elected. And, but yeah. Yeah,
I think he went on to make a pretty valid point, but it started from the same spot that a lot of his points come from, which is there's a lot of money in everybody's own. But
that's his strong suit, right? I mean, he's being able to channel that Occupy Wall Street sort of vibe,
yeah,
and that's the strength of his campaign.
Yeah.
But it does get a little. I don't want to say redundant, but he works that into everything.
Yeah,
foreign policy, banks, medicine, what have you.
Yeah. Everything.
And it's not that he's wrong.
No, he's absolutely right. And he often ends up at a very good point, but the argument always starts at a very, like, what you have to understand is, like, the first thing.
The big banks and the corporations. And you're like, come on, man.
He didn't answer the question. What is the answer?
Okay, that's all true. How are we going to stop dividing ourselves? Right. What are we going to do to bridge the divide?
I actually thought that he did answer this question on this particular occasion because just one small nuance was he threw Republicans and Democrats under the bus on this. And said, you know, like, basically, like, it's a bullshit question because it's not people reaching across the aisle that is needed. It's the fact, like, these fights exist because people are being bought on either side of the argument.
That's true. But how do we fix it then, Bernie?
We got to get the big money.
Out of politics.
Out of politics.
But how do we do that?
Elect Bernie Sanders. I don't know.
I know. Elect Bernie Sanders and
it's a circular argument, right?
535 more like him.
Okay, when we elect me, how are we going to do it? Get the big money out. How are we going to do that? Elect me.
Yeah.
But then how are we going to get Congress? Just elect 535 Bernie Sanders to Congress. Like, that's not
What if he introduces
realistic.
A clone army in the next debate?
Okay, great. I'm done. Then we're great. Then we're perfect. Done.
Can they have some weird time to Boba Fett's backstory?
On Geonosa? Yeah. Or what are those called?
The next question I really loved, there was a couple, like O'Malley had something to say about like stop dividing ourselves or whatever, but who cares? Clinton was asked another YouTube question by this young kid named Carter something. I couldn't get his last name and I couldn't rewind it, so sorry about that.
I'll find it.
And he asked really specifically to Hillary Clinton, you know, most of my peers are Bernie Sanders supporters. And I would like to know what you are going to do to get the younger vote, which is the millennial vote, which is not just me and Dana's generation, but the generation that we consider really not part of our generation, which is like what are they at this point? Like 16 to something. They're very young.
Yeah.
I don't feel connected to them generationally, but they are technically millennials, and he's 22.
We do need them to come out and vote. But that kid was 22. He looked like he was about 14.
Yeah. No.
16-year-olds don't come out and try to vote.
But he asked the question that this podcast is trying to answer, which is, how do we get you fuckers to fucking vote? And so she...
I wasn't crazy about her answer.
Not me neither. I mean, but she's not Bernie Sanders. And he said, like, you know, he's our man. What are you going
to
do?
She needs to sharpen that.
And she said, we're going to give community college 2 years for free. And then, so she says this thing that I think must be disingenuous, because otherwise she'd just be saying what Bernie says. She says, I'd like to offer debt-free tuition to state schools. How is that different from free tuition to state schools?
No.
Debt-free meaning what?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
If there's a sliding scale and you pay something, but we'll make sure you leave with no debt. And I don't know how.
I don't know how that works. I don't understand what that means. And she didn't explain it. And I will have to look it up, I guess. But I'm sure it'll be gobbledygook.
She's going to have to do a lot better to say why, if and when Bernie bows out, that all these young, energetic millennial types should show up and vote for her. And she's really kind of stumbling on that question. Even on Rachel Maddow tonight, I think the same question was asked. And again, it was the same sort of vague, well, you know,
I worked for Obama. Exactly.
It's like, no, that's not good enough. It does worry me. You know,
what are you going to do to this Connor kid who asked you a question directly? He's 22. He loves Bernie. Bernie's out. Make him want to vote for you. And she's like,
he should. It's like, we know that.
So I've got two thoughts on this one. One is why I think Bernie's so much stronger on this is because he has a specific plan of where the money's going to come from.
Right.
Whereas Hillary has not said anything about what the minutiae of that would be.
Well, that's not true, actually, but go ahead.
She has said specifically where the money would come from.
Yeah, she's got she has it all planned out. Bernie's like, but
has she said what the plan is, or does she say, I've got a 3-point plan, like she always says?
No. It's specifically where the money comes from. Okay. Hers is like detailed in dollars.
Okay.
Yeah, his all is right. not.
And so I would hers argue, is more specific, I would argue but that the energy from the millennials is less about detailed plans and more
who cares
about
the
energy.
Debt? Nobody gives a shit about the debt.
I think
ahead.
That that's absolutely true. I'm sure that it's a lot about the energy. But when you say specifically, we're going to take it from the banks who basically screwed your financial future for the thing that they screwed your financial future with, that sounds like a really great fucking plan.
Look, I think Hillary's also trying to... Go ahead.
The second point is just that... And I was going to say this earlier, but it's just interesting to me that Hillary married herself to Obama so much on this debate, when on the Republican side, they were saying that if you vote for Hillary, it's just going to be another Obama term.
Yeah.
You'd think that she'd try to maybe distance herself at least a little bit on a couple things, but she really embraced it.
Why would she?
See, first of all, Congressional Black Caucus, that is this is not a racial thing. This is a straight up serious thing.
Congressional
you
Black
cannot
Caucus
be in the Congressional Black
watching.
Caucus in South Carolina and trash Obama. None of them did. All of them tied themselves to him more closely than they ever have in any other debate. Also, Hillary has been tying herself to him more closely than anybody else because she was his Secretary of State.
No, yeah, she can't really run from him that much. It's just she brought him up intentionally, specifically, many times. But
everybody's been brainwashed into thinking that's something that she should even be considering doing, because the other side hates him and reviles him so much. The majority of Americans do not.
Yes.
Despite all the issues and problems, he's still hitting close to 50% approval.
I just thought it would put a lot of negative Hillary soundbites into the AM radio atmosphere.
So what?
Yeah, but I don't think that's bad,
but
because
remember,
the majority of people don't hate him.
When you're
as much.
Watching the other side debate, none of them, except maybe Jeb and Kasich, and look where they are giving a thought at all to a general election.
That's true.
That's all red meat, double, triple down on the red meat, and then Trump and Cruz being the front runners are making it even worse.
That's very true.
So they're in such huge trouble on so many fronts that right now it's just about winning the nomination, and the winning the nomination is how much do I hate Obama.
And I think she's learning from Al Gore. Al Gore ran from Clinton so fucking hard and said, like, I hate that guy and he's awful and I'm nothing like him and he's terrible and I don't want to. And everyone was like, oh, I kind of like that guy, actually.
Yeah, not literally. It was just more trust me, I'm not that guy.
Exactly.
Like, well, we like that
but
guy.
But we like that guy. And he did a lot of good things for me. I mean, he got a blowjob, I get that. But, like, he's not bad.
And nobody cared about the blowjob.
He bombed a thing, but everyone bombs a thing once in a while. The economy is great.
What Al Gore and his campaign never figured out was that the only people that really really, really cared about the blowjob were never going to vote for Al Gore any fucking way.
Nope.
And they already hated Clinton, and it was yeah. a witch hunt. Yeah, a very public, very humiliating, very sexist witch hunt, but yes,
but we got a pretty hunt. Steamy book out of it.
Ugh.
We got a lot of steamy. Blah. We got some steamy 60 Minute episodes. And
Star Report, man.
Yeah.
Woo. It's just porn. Anyway, okay, so yeah, that's that.
Well, the one point I was going to make is that Hillary is sort of walking a fine line here, right? She's got the older voters, the older yeah. African-American and Latino voters, and the older...
The union, sort of. Yeah.
The baby boomer moms, like, you know, my mom's age. And mm-hmm. I it's not like sort of an active dislike necessarily for the millennials, but, you know, I think she sort of has to hedge her bets and be more the mature candidate and the more pragmatic candidate.
But don't you understand, like, the baby boomer moms have millennial kids?
Yes.
So, like, talking about their student loan debt is going to reach them and their kids.
Well, I think she is going to have to learn to appeal and talk to that group better than she is.
Yeah, she yeah. is. She is. Talk because, to your fucking daughter, by the way. Chelsea look, Clinton is my age.
You may okay. You right? may you may squeak by and win the election with the, if the millennials stay home, but forget about having a friendly Congress.
Yeah.
She needs them to show up and vote down ballot.
The down vote. Yeah. Absolutely. She needs. Yeah. She does. She needs. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, so, I mean, I think she's been trying to speak their language a little bit more. I've heard her throw some jargon around a little bit of lingo.
She needs to get a lot
she
better.
Needs to stop and with the lingo.
The lingo's killing me.
She yeah. seems completely yeah. unprepared every time she gets asked this question of if Bernie bows out, how are you going to get his supporters to vote for you?
Because she yeah. doesn't know.
Well, she better figure
like
it
last
out.
Night. She was like, "Well, also like I support gay rights and women rights and civil rights," and you're like, "All right." And, I mean, yeah.
And how about that?
We
dubstep?
Support that too. You want to talk about like lolcats or something? Like that's you don't like. Okay, we support all those things too, just like our parents do. What about specific things that address my issues? Which is something Bernie specifically talks about, and she doesn't.
Yeah.
So, but I get the push and pull. I get that she has the older white vote. I get that she has a lot of the non-millennial, and they don't like us very much. Vote, but. We're the future, and if you, yeah, I, it's important.
So what's next on the fact check roundup?
Okay, let's see. So next on the debate schedule was big banks.
Mm-hmm.
Bernie hit Hillary on receiving money from Wall Street and speaker's fees. Clinton kind of turned it around and said, like, defended Obama and hit Sanders on his criticism of the president for supporting Wall Street.
Yeah, which is kind of a red herring misdirection yeah. kind of thing.
Back and forth. They really got into it when basically Clinton – Bernie was giving her shit about receiving fees from Goldman Sachs for speaker's fees. Mm-hmm. And then he was hitting Obama on being soft on Wall Street, and then – she came back and basically said, like, look.
How dare you say anything bad about Obama?
Yeah, yeah, she did. She said, like, is, you called him weak.
Which is a good tactical move.
Yeah, didn't especially really in front of that question. Crowd. She called him weak. I'm sorry. He called Obama weak. And that's going to be our next fact check. So she basically said that he called Obama weak and tried to find someone or tried to advocate for someone to primary Obama in 2012. I looked this up. I looked in a lot of different places. The short answer is, yeah, that's all true. Hmm. He did not publicly, actively try to find someone to primary against Obama that we know of. So publicly.
He just looked into it. It was public in that when he said that specific quote, it was on a radio program.
And on C-SPAN.
I vaguely remember Fox News running with that for a hot minute.
So he went on a radio program in July 22nd of 2011 on the Tom Hartman Show, mm-hmm. which was a pretty liberal show. And he was throwing a bunch of shade at Obama saying, you know, he did one thing as the candidate and he's doing an entirely other thing as president. And he is billing or kneeling to the will of the Republicans and compromising too much. And he's giving away too much.
Yeah, I remember.
And the guy said, so do you think someone should primary him? And he said, yeah, I think that wouldn't be a bad idea. I think that we should discuss the issues, and I think that there should be someone to challenge the president. You know, he's not a demagogue, and he should be challenged, and he should be
pulled to the left.
He didn't say pulled to the left, but he said, you know, he should be held to the promises he made to the American people.
Yeah, I do remember news outlets making kind of a big deal about that for a week or two, and then realize nobody's going to actually do it.
Right, and then like 6 months later, well, about 3 months later, he came on C-SPAN and said basically like, I think he's weak on, now he didn't say weak as a president, he said weak on these specific issues, right. And I think that, yeah, he's like, I'm not going to discuss if I'm actively campaigning for someone to run against him, but I will tell you that these discussions are happening. So mm-hmm. Hillary's not wrong. He was very, very critical of President Obama in 2012.
Bernie sort of denied that on the debate stage.
He absolutely did. He absolutely denied it. He said, I campaigned for him the hardest. I went out for him. He campaigned for me.
Once it was clear he was going to be the nominee again.
Yeah, but he completely denied saying any of that. And so Bernie lied. He said all of that. That's on record.
Sorry, guys. That, we're Bernie supporters.
I love Bernie. We're gonna call it like we said. But I'm going to just tell you, like, I looked into actually like listening to the radio program and was like, dude, you said it.
And now I'm remembering that. And I didn't know Bernie Sanders as a household name, but I remember it was like an independent guy from Vermont was saying this stuff, and Fox News was jerking themselves off about it because they thought maybe there would be a real challenge, and of course there wasn't, and then everybody forgot about it. But
we love Bernie back then. I've always loved Bernie as like the super weirdo from Vermont, but like he does all the things I like, but like he's not a serious person.
He wasn't
person.
A household name. We knew the name.
No, he wasn't a serious person.
Like maybe Angus King or, you know, something.
He wasn't a serious person. He was a person who like, oh, that's the guy who wants universal health care and wants to like, if you come into Vermont, we're going to arrest you for war crimes, George Bush. And like, you know, crazy. Yeah. So I'm like, yeah, fine. It's
fine.
We
love that guy, but sure.
But then in 2012, in May of 2012, he came out and campaigned for Obama.
Sure,
and so what he said after that was true. He absolutely did everything he could to get Obama elected. And he campaigned for him and he supported him. And there's no evidence he actively, publicly tried to get anyone to primary him. But everything Hillary said that he said is absolutely true.
So there you go. Some good fact check stuff right there.
Well, Rich, I'd like to bring it back to an earlier point, too, for this particular question, is that this was a pivot answer for her.
Yeah.
This was not an answer to the question. This was absolutely a prepared smear. So on the question, I think this is another one where she absolutely does not have the answer correct. She does not know how to explain away her ties to Wall Street.
I
read an article in the Wall Street Journal
she's
today.
She's got ties to Wall Street. There's no getting around that.
No, I mean, she needs to find a way to create a narrative that makes sense and does not make her look bad around that. I mean, I read an article today in the Wall Street Journal.
Can I pause for just 1 second and totally support you and just tell you what the question was and what she said and how that ties into exactly what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
So how she got to Sanders is fucking with Obama, which is a really great point because I got lost even, and I'm glad you brought us back to where she came from. The question was about big banks and on what we should do about big banks and sort of how they caused the crisis and all of that. And Bernie answered it the way he always does. And then he hit Hillary on receiving money from Wall Street and speaker's fees. And then she came back and did not defend any of those things.
No.
And literally just said, like, you hit Obama on this and you hit Obama on that and you said this and you said that. And it went back and forth for a long time. So anyway, I just wanted to clarify in case anybody forgot why we were talking about this. But go ahead.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a really good debate tactic to change the question. Absolutely. But, you know, and everyone was talking about whether or not Bernie ever said this thing about Obama or not.
Yep.
So it absolutely worked. But she still does not have a good answer to the question about how do you defend your ties to Wall Street.
Well, she's
a private citizen and she knows a lot, and so if someone wants to pay her to come speak about her knowledge base, I don't have a problem with that.
Well, this is the narrative. The narrative is Bernie is saying Wall Street is bad and they're the source of all the evil, and Hillary is saying, look, I'm tough on Wall Street, but you know, Wall Street isn't necessarily all bad, and it's tough for her to parse because, you know, we're in this climate now where people, you know, ties to Wall Street are not a good thing.
Well, yeah, and I mean, it's I just want her to be able to have a clear answer to the question, how are you not beholden to Wall Street lobbyists?
She's just saying, how have you not been? I'm totally not.
Right.
I mean, it's true. I don't think there is. I think that's a weakness of hers. I think
it
you're
is.
Absolutely right.
It is.
That
it,
she like probably saying, is a little bit beholden. But then she hit Martin O'Malley at one point and said, like, dude, you've raised how much money from Wall Street? And he was like, that's not the point. And she's like, well, it's the point for me, but not for you. Like,
Yeah, and then she kind of realized she was wasting her time hitting Martin O'Malley. Who's
because, like, who gives
polls?
A shit about Martin O'Malley?
Don't waste my breath.
Oh, wait, I'm talking to that guy? Never mind.
Yeah, not to diss Martin O'Malley. I like Martin O'Malley. He's just not ready for prime
time. He's way out of his league.
Yeah. He's got some good zingers in there here and there, but
he needs more polishing.
Yeah.
Okay, here's one where Bernie flailed. They asked him really specifically, like, look, you have put out all these plans that people really love, and it sounds really great, right? You're going to pay for this, and you're going to pay for that, and you're going to give us back this, and you're going to do all this stuff. You know, you've accounted for a tiny percentage of how you're going to pay for that. How are you going to pay for the rest of it? And he went round and round with himself on this one. He was like, oh, I'm going to close the loophole on the Cayman Islands, and I'm going to tax on Wall Street circulation. And then she's like, you said all that before. That was for these two specific things. But like, what other things are you going to do? Because we're talking hundreds of billions of dollars at this point that you're promising. And he really didn't have an answer. So then he just sort of
trillions when you
hit Wall Street and said, like, I'm going to just hurt Wall Street, and I'm just going to make rich people pay. And it was not a strong answer, which for him hurts because it is so extreme that that's the one thing people are going to want to know the most. How much are you going to raise my taxes? I think is the question. If you give me all of these things, just tell me how much more I got to pay, or how much more each of us has to pay depending on our class or whatever it is.
Or give us an easily understandable cost-benefit analysis.
Right, exactly. And he won't say he's not going to raise taxes, because of course he is.
Mm-hmm.
But he won't really
to minimize that
tell us. Exactly. And I think that's not great for him, at least from my perspective.
Yeah,
because
it seems a little evasive.
It is. It's totally evasive. So Clinton responded to that and just said, I'm the only candidate who has promised not to raise taxes on the middle class. And the reason for that is I'm promising less, basically. Mm-hmm. And then she brought up debt-free tuition again, which I still don't understand. But talked about childcare, paid family leave, and debt-free tuition all being paid for on taxing the wealthy.
Well, you know, but in ways they're smart about this, because your average voter, unfortunately, just wants to hear the buzzwords. They're not going to even invest the intellectual capital, if they have it, to try to figure out would this actually work and how much would it cost.
Right.
And this is proof of whenever they show the audience reaction, debate reaction, it's not like people press their little lever buttons and the thing goes up when something that makes sense is said. It's when a buzzword they like to hear and the meter goes up, and then I just slap my head and go, what is the point? So unfortunately, they're both playing that game.
Yes.
And I like them both, but, you know, we're in a buzzword era.
And I think that that's completely true. And I also think that, and this strikes me every time we're in a primary season.
Maybe in a general election.
Everyone seems to be running on being legislator in chief.
Yeah.
Like, everyone says, like, here's my plan for here's how I'm going to pay for this, and, like, they need the Congressional Budget Office's approval for XYZ. It's like, why don't you just stay a senator and introduce that bill and try to get co-sponsors? I understand why the executive branch has, a little bit of sway in pushing things particular directions, and they get to say what they will and will not sign or what they would like to promote as their agenda.
Yeah, it's almost like a figurehead thing at this point, right?
Yeah, I mean...
The president is important.
President does a lot, but president doesn't write bills and balance budgets.
And a lot of people don't even understand.
Well, and it's so interesting when you have a governor versus a senator talking, the different strategies that they take, even a mayor or a senator or a representative talking, like when you're in an executive branch of government, you have a really different perspective on what to do.
And on the other side, like, you know, Jeb and Christie, and to a lesser extent O'Malley, make that point.
They do.
Ad nauseum.
They do.
They
and
should.
Kasich. I mean, all four of them are like, okay, well, here's how you be an executive of a small thing. I can, and historically people love governors, right? They love governors as president. Okay. But we are running out of time a little bit, so I'm going to move on. I wish we could talk more about climate change. Unfortunately, we can't, because we got about 2.5 minutes on it.
Well, let's at least talk about that, because we didn't talk at all about gay rights or reproductive rights, which I don't know if we're going to come
gay
up
rights,
in any debates.
No reproductive rights, women's rights, nothing. Climate change, Hillary Clinton, the front runner, didn't even get to answer a question about.
Nope.
The first question went to Bernie, and they asked him, how do we make people care about climate change? And he said, basically, they already do. the younger generation gets it, and more people are realizing it. He's like, people in my state understand it's warmer. People in my surrounding states understand that there are massive storms. I think it's going to be fine. The debate is over. Republicans are owned by the fossil fuel lobby, and right. they won't admit it. And so basically, like, his answer was like, it's fine. Everyone gets it. And I'm like, oh, my God. Okay. Did you hear the debate last week? Because nobody on the other side gets it. And there's, like, half the country voting for them.
And the moderators have just, of both sides have just decided nobody really gives a shit. Let's just talk about taxes for 2 hours.
Literally, we talked about it for, like, maybe 2 minutes. Yeah. Tops, including the time the moderators took to ask the question. O'Malley was asked as a response, and he said, at least on this stage where we all believe in science,
yeah,
we can talk about this.
And he's got a 100% green energy plan in 50 years or something?
2050.
2050, yeah.
And he has no way of explaining it. Now, that was the one other fact check that I have. Well, not the one other. The other, which is really small, which is essentially that he credited Obama with reducing the foreign oil or energy mm-hmm. dependence.
Yeah.
Totally true that that's happened, although if you look at research, he over-exaggerated the government's role in energy independence. It's very small fact check. Basically, it had more to do with drilling technology and innovation techniques. But it's true that in 2008, we were dependent on foreign oil 53%.
Yeah.
And today it's 24.3%, which is literally almost half, which is kind of amazing. And maybe we don't give Obama credit, but like that's pretty great.
It's mixed for Obama because Obama does take a lot of heat from the left for opening up some, you know, natural gas pipelines and drilling and, in certain places. So it's, you know, six of one, half a dozen of the other.
Yeah.
Well, and this is an interesting stat to pull out because it really depends on how you measure. If you measure by dollars spent in the United States versus abroad versus actual, like, kilowatt hours, overseas or domestic, those things change the numbers quite a bit.
Sure, of course.
So, I mean, obviously he's going to go in the more favorable direction.
Well, and you have a rapidly transforming petroleum industry. And the price of oil is just going down, down, down. Now that the Iran sanctions are lifted, it's probably going to go down even more.
Right.
And this has sort of been the reverse of what we kind of expected that might push the green energy revolution. We were thinking, well, gas prices are so high, the public's just going to revolt. Well, now it's becoming less profitable to sell oil. So now that might actually be ironically the push, but whatever it takes.
You know, strangely, that actually seems to make more sense.
It makes more sense to me.
Yeah.
It absolutely does. Because there's no disincentive for the oil companies to keep selling oil when it's $150 a barrel.
Exactly.
And $5 a gallon at the pump, right? Your SUV sales might go down a little bit, but, you know, you're more than going to make up for that.
Absolutely.
But this is what's getting really frustrating now. Is it just going to be these moderators on both sides? It's just they look at, I guess, the Facebook metrics and say the only thing people care about are taxes and ISIS.
Yeah.
We're not going to talk about climate change.
Jobs.
We're not going to talk about reproductive rights.
No, we're not going to talk about the fact, you know. I got accused of this the other day from a member of my family that, like, all you want to talk about is Planned Parenthood. And I said, well, I feel like it's pretty fucking relevant, considering that there was just a shooting at a Planned Parenthood about 50 miles from my house, and that the president of the United States just vetoed a bill defunding it federally.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think this is an issue that I'm just bringing up willy-nilly because I'm some lady. I think it's pretty fucking relevant to talk about. And I think that the candidates have pretty specific positions that we should get to hear about in a national debate.
Yeah, the only time we heard about it, I think, was the first, maybe the second GOP debate when there was a fake video that they could pontificate about. Past that, it's nothing worth talking about.
Well, I mean, Carly brought it up quite famously, but I
did her a lot of good.
Where are my Democrats talking about this?
Right.
Why? Explain to me, if I'm being a hysterical lady and it's not relevant that we talk about the two things that are pretty important, why are we not talking about
it? I think Hillary mentioned it slightly in passing, but the moderators are just not asking it at all.
No, it's not coming up.
It's going to have to eventually.
And I mean, if you're being a hysterical lady for bringing up Planned Parenthood, are they being hysterical crackpots for bringing up guns in every argument? Because that's all I hear about.
And ISIS is coming to murder your
ISIS
children?
ISIS guns.
Mm-hmm.
And then they feel like you talk about Planned Parenthood too much?
I mean, it just makes me crazy. And also, you know, it makes me crazy as a Democrat and as a liberal because I feel like this is an area where we should get our point out early and often and consistently that no matter who you vote for as a Democrat, here's how we feel about reproductive rights. Here's how we feel about Planned Parenthood. So that whoever wins the nomination, that shit's on record.
Yeah.
And we can go back and say, like, okay, here's how we feel. What? How do you feel? What have you said? Go ahead. Tell me, please.
And I don't think Bernie's talked much about this at all.
No.
When it does come up, he's obviously on the right
side.
Yeah,
when he's like, of course, Planned Parenthood, fuck those people. But he doesn't, like, talk about it as, like, it's okay, for me, reproductive rights are an economic issue. Right?
Of course they are.
They are an economic issue, so he should talk about it as an economic issue.
As his paid family leave, at least he talks about that.
He does.
And income, gender income equality.
Yeah. Right.
Paid, like, but...
That's just
like,
a part of it, yeah.
A big part of Bernie's problem is, and we've brought this up so many times, is, well, no.
No, I think, like, he's so much more concerned about fair pay for fair work, which is obviously a concern for every woman. I think it's less of a concern than... Can I have an IUD? No. Are you going to take away my birth control?
That's not true. I totally disagree.
Hi, I'm the lady in the room, and I'm telling you right now.
No, but I'm telling you what Bernie
Sanders.
Bernie was on record fighting for this very hard in the 60s and 70s, and this these issues were still there. You know, I just don't think he's being asked about it very much by the press and the moderators.
I'm saying, as a woman that is 32 voting, it matters more to me that he talks about and cares about my reproductive rights than that. He talks necessarily about, like, the complex equation that is that I make less money than men for the same amount of work.
Sure, but you think that the reason that he's wrong, doesn't talk about this, is because he's too old to understand?
Here's what I'm going to say about this.
Like, how does old factor in?
Because he was a senator back when we didn't have reproductive rights, and so he fought for them and we won them. And I think that he kind of is like, okay, that's check off the list.
Oh, I disagree.
And so I don't think it's as present in his mind politically, because it's something that he's accomplished, that he doesn't necessarily understand the attacks that are coming. I don't think he takes them as seriously as I do. I think that he's sort of continuing to progress and look ahead at things he can continue to do, because that's still legal, technically, right?
I disagree. I mean, think about what happened with black rights. I mean, when you talk about
what happened,
black civil rights, we had desegregation. We had several things happen in his lifetime that he didn't just check off the list.
Yeah, no, that was never checked off the list. That was just a policy matter.
Well, reproductive rights were never really fully checked off
the list
either.
They have
been. How many Planned Parenthoods were ever in Mississippi?
No, there have been plenty, and they've been disappearing now. But no,
in Texas.
No, reproductive rights are legal. Abortion is fucking legal. Period. End of story.
So the point is, should Bernie be more proactive in talking about reproductive rights?
Right.
Yes. Protecting them and going against people who would like to repeal the things that he worked really hard for back in the day. I think that he should be like, hey, I did that, and that is not something that we're doing undoing.
I do hope the three Democratic candidates do realize, look, if the moderators and the press aren't going to bring it up, we got to be proactive and start talking about it in these debates and forums, because you know what the answer is going to be on the other side.
Exactly. And it works to our advantage to make them answer the question.
It is not a political liability.
No, not at all.
Gay rights and women's rights are reproductive rights, women's rights, all of them are like, bring it up. You're only going to help yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're going to make your point clear to the women of my generation that, hey, we didn't forget about you. Just because Roe passed doesn't mean that we think that we should have two fucking abortion clinics in Texas and no one's talking about that.
Yeah.
Or that we can shoot up a Planned Parenthood clinic and no one cares. Or that,
that we
Obama
have
to
recall
we have to have the president repeal something. We have to recall a state representative for blame. Like, this is something my generation of women care about and we
deeply
feel attacked by.
And a lot of men.
And no one is talking about it.
Yeah.
And it's upsetting to me personally.
And I don't think they've forgotten about it. I think they get lost in the weeds when they start going at each other on guns and taxes and healthcare. Their advisors are going to have to say, hey, we need to talk about this. We need to bring this up.
We need to remind people that we give a shit.
Because it'll also, if they bring it up and become more forceful and talk about it, it'll force the other side, you know, to have to talk about it, because those moderators on the other side will finally say, you know, Hillary and Bernie, they said Planned Parenthood, you know, they support it and they support Roe, and then they're going to have to show their ass. That is only going to help us politically. Anyway, we're starting to go over here, but any closing thoughts, you guys, or anything we want to get in on fact checks?
Well, you had one other thing to say about
that. I was just going to say, before you said that you think it's because Bernie's too old, I was going to say it's just, like I've said before, I think that on several things, like when he fucked up with the Black Lives Matter movement and not talking about them, I think he thinks that it's a foregone conclusion that people understand that if they go with his reforms
they
as they propose,
record.
Then they'll know based on my record and know that that's what I'm aiming for.
Of course I mean you too.
And of course I mean you too. Yeah. And of course that's included. Because, and so he's just trying to propose a solution for everything.
Right.
And thinks that everyone's going to be on board if they just pay attention and listen. Or like if they sort remember
of already
him.
Already know, it's Bernie Sanders. Of course he supports my reproductive rights. Well, I don't know that necessarily unless you tell me. And also, the 19-year-olds out there who don't know the fuck Bernie Sanders is need to hear from you.
Yes.
Yeah.
I do not agree with him that it's a foregone conclusion. No, I'm saying I just think it's a campaign's mistake. I think it's something that why he doesn't bring it up. It's why he fucks up.
We literally saw him make that mistake with the Black Lives Matter movie.
Yeah, he was like, I walked
don't
with Martin
know
Luther
who I
King.
Am? No,
and they were like,
we
no,
all
I
know.
Don't.
Who the fuck you
and
are.
Also, I don't give a shit who you are. I need to understand that you know what Black Lives Matter means, that you care, and what your position is. Right.
The fact that his campaign allowed there to even be a situation in which, like, Bernie Sanders' commitment to the black community was ever questioned means that they are not...
Or that he ever said All Lives Matter one time. He only said it one time, and he took it back, and he did it Killer Mike and all the things. But, yeah, they fucked that up. And I don't want him to fuck up reproductive rights.
Yeah.
Get this one right, man. Get this one right. This is not a women's issue. This is an everybody issue.
Yep, absolutely.
This is a freedom issue. Uh-huh. This is a lot of other things. Don't fuck this up. Okay, the only other thing, and I know we're running over, but just give me one sec, because this is a pretty important one, is his gun rights record.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to run it down really fast for everybody who didn't hear this. Basically, Hillary accused him of being pretty lenient on guns. She said he was a pretty consistent vote for the NRA. She said he allowed guns to go on the Amtrak, which is the national train system. And that he gave the gun lobby and basically manufacturers and sellers of guns a free pass. Unfortunately, a lot of that's true, but there's some nuance to it.
Caveats, yeah.
So, yes, he did allow passengers on Amtrak trains to bring guns onto the trains.
In
now,
checked bags.
They are only allowed to bring them in checked bags. They have to give Amtrak advance notice, and they have to be inside locked and approved cases. They can't carry them on their person or on the train. The Amtrak officials have access to the carry-on luggage or the checked luggage. No one else does. And he has said post-running for president that he would rethink that. The other thing was the 2005 Protection of Lawful Commerce in Arms Act, which provided protections for licensed manufacturers, dealers, sellers of guns or ammunition, or trades associations from civil lawsuits resulting from misuse of firearms or ammunition. This seems like a non-issue. That seems like it's going back to some of the pharmaceutical stuff we were talking about. It had a direct relation to the Aurora shootings, which are close and dear to our hearts. Mm-hmm. It was a bad move on his part. He absolutely voted for it because he was from Vermont at the time. However, it included a few exemptions, six exactly, to that rule that they couldn't civilly act. None of them would have helped in this case. One of them was negligence. One was selling a gun knowing it was going to be used for a crime, obviously.
Yeah.
Or if they marketed and sold it in violation of state or federal law. So really teethless exceptions. It was a bad move on his part. It was a bad vote. He shouldn't have done it. He has since been running for president and been criticized by Hillary Clinton, said basically, yeah, I'm going to rethink that. Like, that's probably not a great move. It was good for Vermont, but maybe not the country. That kind of a presidential candidate thing to say. So I just want to get that on the record. That those are the facts.
Yeah, and it's sort of hard to figure how much that's going to play.
I think primary-wise, maybe a little bit.
Not at all. I think they both realize either of these candidates are going to be light years better than the other side on gun control.
Yeah.
Even if Bernie had one bad vote. But Hillary...
And Hillary needs to stop hitting Bernie. Can we just say that?
I think she's got to be very careful of the style in which she hits Bernie.
Yeah.
It did get sort of contentious and nasty and condescending with Obama.
Yep.
In 2008, and that caused a big rift.
And
I think that tarnished the Clintons a little bit.
Yeah.
And it also it also became a self-fulfilling downward trend as far when people like me started to really get turned off when we were still kind of on the fence and she started going that direction. It was like, ooh, no, yeah, we definitely do need to go a new direction. So I think she's got to be very careful not to fall into that trap again.
And also not to alienate the people who love Bernie, who may not have voted for anybody, but we're going to vote for him. She needs to not basically message them as saying, fuck you, I don't like him, so that means I don't care about your issues. She needs to really walk the line of, like, I love Bernie and I love his issues. We're still a little bit different and you should vote for me, but I still love Bernie because I still want you to vote Democrat in the goddamn primary and in the general. You still got to vote.
If she can find a way to, without being condescending, say, I really love this guy, but let's be serious.
She's sort of trying to, but...
he can't win a general, maybe?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, so I could go for
that. That kind of thing would get a lot of people to switch over, for the primary at least. I just think last night she did get super condescending and way too negative. Like, she was bringing the negative attacks 80%
so
of the time.
A little bit.
He was slightly retaliatory.
Yeah, but see...
Her ads have been outrageous.
Yeah.
So. And I'm like, Hillary, did we not learn with Obama?
Yeah,
don't do that
shit.
Don't do that shit.
That's what I'm a little worried about. She's starting to go in that direction.
That.
Because like I said, sure, she could alienate a huge chunk of these Bernie followers and still probably win a general versus Trump or Cruz. But down ballot, we're going to get killed again. And then your presidency is going to be
toothless. No millennials are going to vote. Yeah. If they're not going to vote for Bernie, they're not going to vote for their congressman who they don't know.
Yeah, she's going to have to really walk the line on this better. And the last few weeks have been a little troubling, so
I hope
she circles the wagons here.
Yeah, I agree.
That's about going to do it for us.
Yeah.
We got another Republican debate in
you're breaking my heart.
Before Iowa, one more. And it'll be a shit show between Trump and Cruz again.
Should we try to do this and fact check the things that are true?
I
don't know if I can
go
through them all. We'll do a podcast
way
or the other. Also, if you guys have things you want us to talk about, if there's current issues that you don't really understand or you want to know more about or you want to know something about, let us know and we'll try to include them at the top of the show.
IrreverentTestimony@gmail.com. We also have a Facebook. Look up Irreverent Testimony.
And Twitter.
And Twitter. You can hit us up there. Hit us with comments, questions.
Hate mail.
Love
whatever.
Love notes, sexts, whatever. we're game. Okay, that's about going to do it. As usual, I'm Travis.
I'm Rachel.
And Dana.
And stay active, stay tuned, and stay involved. Adios.